Tonight is February the 24th, and we are continuing, we're going to finish Parshas Toldos tonight. We are on page 142 and 143. Last week, or 2 weeks ago, we described the end of Yaakov getting the brachos instead of Esav, and we talked about why Hashem had arranged that, had set that up in the first place. And that now history is set, that Yaakov is in control of whether anti-Semitism will have any power over him or not. And anti-Semitism becomes the threat which keeps Yaakov in line. And we, being the descendants of Yaakov, now have to deal with that as well. Now, we've alluded to the end of the parsha several times, where there's going to be another bracha. And that's the bracha that Yitzchak is going to give to Yaakov. This bracha he had never intended to give to Esav. This had always been designated for Yaakov. And we know that that bracha is going to be the bracha to get the land of Israel. And that's what we're up to right now, in the way that develops. Thank you so much. The way that develops in the next step. So, it's Perek Chaf Ches. It's chapter 28, verse 1. But I want to go back. We talked about this already, but I want to give it. Let's present everything in context. Let's go back to one pasuk. Let's go back to on page 140. Pasuk Mem Vav, verse 46. So Rivka told Yaakov, you need to run away. Don't stay here. I don't want to lose you and Esav both on the same day. Go to my brother Lavan, and you'll find a wife over there until I send, and I'll get you from there. Well, actually, she doesn't even tell Yaakov to get away from this. She just says, go stay with my brother Lavan and until I send for you. Now here, Batoma Rivka, Yitzchak, Rivka says to Yitzchak, Kathi b'chayami tnei b'nos space, I am disgusted with my life on account of the daughters of Ches, meaning Esav's wives. Im lokeach Yaakov isha b'nos Ches ka'ela b'nos ha'aretz, if Yaakov takes a wife from the daughters of Ches, like these other daughters-in-law I have, from the daughters of the land, lama li chayim, why do I have life? Why is there life to me? Now, we already described that what Rivka is saying is that if this is going to continue, then I have no reason to live. My whole purpose of being was to bring the Jewish people into the world, which is embodied by Yaakov, and in order for him to produce the 12 tribes, he needs to have an appropriate wife that can be the mother, or mothers, if it's going to be wives, of the Jewish people. And these girls from Ches, they're not appropriate at all. So why do I have any life? Why bother? Why did I bother with this whole thing of having children, and then trying to get Yaakov the brachos and all that? The whole thing is for naught if it's going to be these daughters of Ches. And therefore, why do I have life? So it's interesting that Rivka never tells Yaakov to get married over there.
142.
Yeah, page 142. Rivka doesn't tell Yaakov to go to Lavan to marry. He just says, go to Lavan and be there to get away from Esav. And she doesn't tell Yitzchak that Yaakov needs to run away because otherwise Esav's going to attack him. She just says, he's got to find a wife and this is a bad place for a wife. So Rivka here takes two things and puts them together. She says to Yaakov, run away. Why? Because otherwise, both you and Esav are going to die. And I don't want to lose you both in the same day. So the motivation for Yaakov to run away is because out of fear of Esav. Then she turns to Yitzchak and says, send Yaakov away. She doesn't even say that explicitly, but she says, she implies, certainly send him away because he has to get married and he can't take away from here because these women are inappropriate. So it's interesting that she does not use the same argument for her son and her husband. Different arguments. You just see, on the surface level, before we delve into this, you just see, and you women know what I'm talking about when I say this, you see the chachma, you see the wisdom of how to get people to do what you want them to do or what they don't necessarily want to do. You don't use the same arguments for each person, and you have to know who you're talking to. And a mother and a wife knows how to talk to her son and how to talk to her husband. And they don't get the same argument, because if you talk to everybody the same way, you're not gonna be successful. Do you have a question?
So let's say Ches, you mean like the son of Amrishon?
No, Ches is one of the seven nations that are in Canaan. The Chitim. Now, we already mentioned last time the reason why she did not tell Yitzchak about Esav's plotting to kill Yaakov is because that was a nevuah, that was a prophecy, because that's how we know that Rivka is a prophetess, because she knew what Esav was thinking, and she had not been given instructions to tell Yitzchak that prophecy. We had already established many times over that prophecy is very specific, and if you're not told to tell, you can't tell. So she was not told to tell Yitzchak about this prophecy, so she did not. And so instead she used the argument of marriage. Why with Yaakov does she not tell him to go to Lavan because of marriage? Why does she choose the argument of Esav is plotting to kill you?
About killing, he's supposed to know about danger.
What's that?
Yaakov is supposed to know that he's in danger.
So she's protecting him, so he should know that he's in danger.
Yes.
Okay.
She wants him to go fast. And if he knows that his life is in danger, he'll run. And if he knows that it's for marriage and he's not yet ready to commit or to even think about marriage, he may not go as quickly.
Okay.
Maybe it's not appropriate for a mother to talk to one child saying negative things about the other child.
He wants to kill you. Okay, but all right, but I hear what you're saying. It's different than saying what she says to Yitzchak is that, oh, these terrible daughters-in-law of mine, I can't take this anymore. Right. In that sort of talk, yeah, might have been inappropriate to go tell Yaakov. But saying that his life is in danger, that's a valid point. That's a valid point. That who says that it's appropriate to speak down about, speak low about her daughters-in-law to the other son. That could be. That's a valid point. Now, the fact that she told Yaakov that Esav is plotting to kill you means, since it was a prophecy, means that she was told to tell Yaakov that Esav is plotting to kill you. So, the nature of the prophecy was that God told her that Esav wants to kill Yaakov, and tell that to Yaakov, and she was not told to tell that to Yitzchak. So Rivka was faced with this dilemma that she was told to tell Yaakov about the prophecy, which would obviously get him thrown away, but not to tell Yitzchak. So she on her own had to think of a different reason to get Yitzchak to tell Yaakov to leave, without telling him, but the reason is because Esav wants to kill him. Why did God not want Yitzchak to be told that Esav wants to kill Yaakov? I don't know the answer to that question. We can surmise, perhaps Yitzchak would feel bad, because the truth is that it's because of his mistake that now Esav wants to kill Yaakov, even though his mistake was no fault of his own. He didn't have the previous prophecy, as we described earlier. There was no way for him to know about what Esav was really like. But it's all, I'm only surmising. I don't know for sure. You have a suggestion?
Yitzchak doesn't know that that Rivka has been manipulating,
orchestrating.
Orchestrating this whole thing with Yaakov.
That is true.
So she's still trying to cover up, and so, you know, she's going to say Esav is going to wants to kill Yaakov, and she's going to tell that to Yitzchak. Might give her hand away that she was sort of involved in the whole thing.
Okay, that's interesting. Even though she only knew it through prophecy.
Yeah.
Right? But that's an interesting point. I mean, it's true that Yitzchak was never told, at least we don't know that he was told, that Rivka was involved, and there's no reason for him to know about it. And once it all transpires, once the whole thing comes out, and Yitzchak, remember, as we talked about the back and forth between Yitzchak and Esav, and in that back and forth, that give and take, Yitzchak gets a better picture of who Esav is, and in the end he realizes my whole plan had no chance of success. So Yitzchak has no complaints. He understands that what ended up happening was the right thing, God's will, and it's the correct thing to happen. But he does not know his wife's role in it, which is a very good point.
Also, he can't know that Esav wants to kill Yaakov because he needs to still give Yaakov that bracha to put him in a bad mood that he wouldn't be able to.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, you're saying bracha. For the next bracha, he still has to be in a good frame of mind. Okay, think of that. That's very interesting. As we discussed, in order to give a proper bracha, you have to be in a good frame of mind. Okay, that's well taken. That's well taken. I don't know from here on in, as we're going to see, we're going to have a very long discussion of the story and the interaction between Yaakov and Lavan. And then we're going to have another long discussion about the story of the interaction between Yaakov and Esav. We're going to have those two discussions without any mention of Yitzchak. Yitzchak won't be mentioned at all until finally, after the story of Yaakov and Lavan, and the story of Yaakov and Esav, Yaakov will return home, and then Yitzchak's death will be described, and they will bury Yitzchak. That's what we'll have a description of Yitzchak. And Yitzchak is not mentioned again. He's hinted to in another place in the Chumash, which we'll discuss when we get there, having to do with the sale of Yosef and the brothers and the whole thing over there. But it's fascinating that at this juncture, it does not seem that Yitzchak was made aware of the fact that Esav is out to kill Yaakov, because God didn't want him to be aware. And I wonder if that has to do with why we're not, Yitzchak is out of the picture until his death, and he doesn't come into play at all.
Well, yeah, I just had one last question, why we didn't discuss, and you did, Limola said, why Rivka didn't tell Yaakov to marry?
Right, and she doesn't tell him to marry.
Yes,
now,
why?
Right, so, we haven't answered that at all. It's we will find, not tonight, but in Parashas Vayetze, when we begin that, next time we meet, we're going to find that that Yaakov understands that he needs to marry. He's the one, when he gets to Lavan, right away makes a deal to marry, because he's aware that he needs to marry. But it seems that Rivka did not want that to be his motivation for leaving. So one suggestion was that he'll go quickly. Right? Now, did he go quickly?
Not quickly from home, but not quickly to marry.
Right. So, not quickly to marry, but did he get to Haran quickly?
Yes.
He had a break of?
He was 14 years in marriage.
14 years he went to study first before he went.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we talked about it several weeks ago, we're actually going to see another reference to that tonight. So why did he go to study for 14 years before he went? Okay, so he had to fortify himself before going to, remember, Yaakov has grown up in the holiest home on the face of the earth. I mean, to grow up in the house of Yitzchak and Rivka, how could you ask for anything better than that? And here he's now going to the trickster, to the liar, to the person who's a deceitful person, to Lavan. And he needs to maintain his integrity there, as we're going to see he does. But that's a very difficult task. So he first has to study Torah. To me, it shouldn't make a difference whether he's going because of marriage or he's going because of fear of his life. Either way, he's going to feel the need to go and study to fortify himself. So I don't know if that would have made a difference whether he was told it was for marriage or for his life. So I want to leave that question hanging for the time being. We'll see if we're able to come back to that. So now, beginning chapter 28, verse pasuk chaf ches, on page 142. Vayikra Yitzchak el Yaakov. Yitzchak calls to Yaakov, vayivarecho, so he blesses him. Vayitzaveo, and he commands him. Vayomer, and he says to him, Lo sikach yisham imnos Kanaan. Do not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Kumlech padena aram. Get up and go to Padan Aram. Beisa v'suel avi imecha, to the home of Besuel, the father of your mother, your grandfather, your maternal grandfather, Besuel. V'kach l'cham isham isha, and take for you from there a wife. Mibnos Lavan, from the daughters of Lavan, achi imecha, the brother of your mother. So go and do not take a daughter, do not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Rather, go to Lavan and take a wife from him. From the go to the house of Bethuel to the and take daughters, take from the daughters of Lavan. V'kel shakai yavarech oscha, and may God bless you, v'yafracha v'yarbecha, and he should make you fruitful and make you many, v'hayisa likal amim, you should be to a congregation of nations, v'yitim lacha es berkas Avraham, and he should give you the blessing of Avraham, lacha ulezarecha itach, to you and your seed with you, l'rishtecha es eretz megurecha, to inherit the land of your sojourning, Asher Asan Elokim Abraham, that God has given to Abraham, which essentially means the land of Israel. Note a few fascinating points. In Pasuk Beis, verse 2, get up and go to Padan Aram, to the home of Bethuel, the father of your mother. Is Bethuel still alive? Bethuel is not alive. How do we know he died?
When
Eliezer went to get a wife for Yitzchak, they attempted to poison Eliezer. You remember that story? And instead, Bethuel ended up eating from the poison and he died. So Bethuel is no longer living. And yet Yitzchak refers to the home as the home of Bethuel, the father of your mother. And take from there, take for you from there a wife from the daughters of Lavan, the brother of your mother. So, why does he refer to the home of Bethuel if Bethuel is not alive? And why accentuate the father of your mother, the brother of your mother? Yaakov doesn't know who his grandfather is. Yaakov doesn't know who his uncle is.
Because it is the same family, but then that son was not as righteous as Bethuel. Maybe he mentioned Bethuel first, because his mother came from that home. She was a tzedekah.
Okay.
Lavan, the brother, don't expect from him. He's warning him already that this, you know, this is not the same type of person. It's going to be different personality. Prepare yourself.
Okay.
I think that you're trying to limit it to his wives to be the future of Israel. And by doing that, rather than just generalizing to a city, they're more specific to be sure that the lineage is carried forward.
Okay, so be very specific. Don't get mixed up. Don't get confused with where you're going.
That's correct.
Okay. By calling the home of Bethuel, it's inescapable, we have to say, that Bethuel's imprint is on the home. It's like saying, "Go to if you're saying go to his home, but he's not living, then you're saying that it's his place. The place is still his. You can tell that the home is Bethuel's home, even though he's no longer there. The home has not changed. If you'll recall, when we talked about Bethuel, he was evil. Lavan is more evil than he. Rivka is praised because she came from a father who was evil and a brother who was evil, and yet she was such a righteous woman. The home is still Bethuel's home. And I want you to take from the daughters of Lavan, the brother of your mother. Why accentuate the fact that it's the father of your mother, the brother of your mother? So I think that Yitzchak is presenting to Yaakov the challenge. You're going to be going to a place which is Bethuel's home. It's still an evil place. Don't get deceived when you're there, because they put up a good front over there in the home of Bethuel and in the home of love, and they're good at that. But it's still not a friendly place spiritually. It's still a dangerous place. But I want you to take a wife from there. Well, hey, Dad, why do you want me to take a wife from there? I mean, if you're telling me go to this bad place, you're telling me don't take a wife from Canaan, because they're terrible people. Instead, go to the other terrible people and take a wife from there. What do you want me to do? Why? Well, you're setting me up for failure. Why do you want me to do that? Because even though it's Besuel and Lavan, but Besuel is the father of your mother, and Lavan is the brother of your mother. There can be and there are righteous women in that home. And remember, we talked about this, how in that home it seems the men were regularly evil and the women were regularly righteous in that home. How that happened, I can't tell you, but it seems to be a common thread in the home of Lavan, Besuel, that strand of the family. And so, on the one hand, it's Besuel's home, be careful, Lavan is there. But on the other hand, I want you to take a wife from there because that is the father of your mother, that is the brother of your mother. And you will find over there righteous women that you can marry. Well, here in Canaan, you can't.
Why should we now get a blessing from Abraham?
That is the blessing for the land of Eretz Israel. See, you are now going to marry. You're then going to start the Jewish people because you're the third of the patriarchs. So now you're going to begin the Jewish people. Once you begin the Jewish people, the Jews need their land. And that's the land of Israel. And that's what Yaakov is going to get.
Is there a mention of the mother of Besuel's wife or Laban's wife?
No, there's no mention of Besuel's wife or Laban's wife. We'll see there's a reference, we'll see when we meet Rachel, we'll see a reference to her mother, but no name. And we talked about this, how we don't find... We talked about, it was already a couple months ago, we talked about how Besuel's father is Abraham's brother. Nachar. And his wife is Milcah. Remember we talked about Milcah, how when Rivka was approached by Eliezer and he said, "Are you? What family are you from?" She said, "I'm from Milcah." But then when Eliezer got to know him and repeated the story, he said that she said she's from Nachar because he didn't want to show that she was really, because she knew that her true claim to fame was not coming from Nachar, it was coming from Milcah, and Milcah being more of the righteous strain in the family. So Milcah is mentioned, of course, and Milcah is Sarah's sister.
Mm-hmm.
So Sarah, of course, and Rivka is mentioned, and Rachel and Leah are mentioned, but Rivka's mother is not mentioned, and Rachel and Leah's mother is not mentioned by name. So we don't know that, but we have to imagine that following the pattern, the women seem to have been righteous women. That's what it seems was the rule in that family, as opposed to the exception. Here, Yitzchak tells him that God will bless you and you will be fruitful and multiply, meaning you'll have children. That's going to be the 12 tribes. You'll be to a multitude of nations. Each tribe is considered a nation in and of themselves. And because of that, in Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, God will give you the blessing of Abraham to give you this land, the land of Eretz Canaan, the land of Eretz Yisrael will become your land. Because once you have the 12 tribes, then that's where you belong. Now, so when Yitzchak is now about to leave, so he's about to run away, he's about to go to Lavan. He's going because his mother sent him, and he's going because his father sent him. So, his mother sent him, why? To get away from Esav. His father sent him, why? To get married. So it comes out that because of the way Rivka presented it to her son and to her husband, that when Yaakov is leaving, Yaakov has two different, we'll call them commandments, two different directives. One from his mother, one from his father. They're both telling him to go to Lavan, to go to her brother. But it's for two entirely different reasons. She said go because of, you got to watch out for Esav. He said go in order to get married. So Yaakov is going for both reasons in the end. But they're coming from two different parents. And what we need to understand is why the difference. Why does it have to be that the the directive to get married is coming from his father, the directive to watch out for Esav is coming from his mother. That creates a certain dynamic within Yaakov himself as he's leaving to go to Haran.
The father wasn't aware necessarily.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So he couldn't warn.
Right. But by the virtue of the fact that Rivka did not tell him go to get married, and she told Yitzchak that he's got to go get married, and then Yitzchak goes and tells Yaakov to go get married. So Yaakov hears it from his father, not from his mother.
Right.
She orchestrated that. As usual, Rivka is the orchestrator. So she has created this dynamic within Yaakov himself. So we need to understand why is that dynamic important? How does that play out?
Did Rivka have further prophecy about what was going to happen once he went to Laban's house? How he was going to be tricked and then...
We don't know. Meaning that we do know that she was a prophetess, and therefore she may have received all kinds of prophecies, but it's not recorded. The only prophecy that she gets that is recorded is that she knew what Esav was thinking. That's the only one that's recorded.
Rabbi, there's more of an inducement to leave because of somebody's about to kill you, as opposed to another person saying, go because of, I want you to marry a wife.
Right. Right. You're right.
But Yitzchak had to be there to tell him to get married because that fulfills the bracha that he just gave to Yaakov. In order to be that third link from the Avot, to get the Mosara from Abraham, you tell him you're going to be fruitful, you're going to multiply, the nations will come from you. That means he has to get married to fulfill this bracha.
That's correct also. He needed to, the steps have to be in that order. Get married, you'll become fruitful and multiply, and then you'll get the land. Right. Can you say something? No. Okay. So hold that thought. Let's move on a little further. Vayishlach pasuk hey verse 5. Vayishlach Yitzchak es Yaakov. Yitzchak sends Yaakov. Vayelach Padan Aram, and he went to Padan Aram. It doesn't mean that he got there, but he set out to go there. El Lavan ben Besuel Harami to Lavan the son of Besuel the Aramite. Achi Rivka the brother of Rivka. Aim Yaakov Esav the mother of Yaakov and Esav. Vayar Esav kiverach Yitzchak es Yaakov. Esav saw that Yitzchak blessed Yaakov. Veshilachah so Padan Aram and sent him to Padan Aram. Lakachas lo misha misha to take for himself from there a wife. Bevarcho so and when he blessed him, when Esav saw that when Yitzchak blessed Yaakov, Vayetzav alav lemor, he commanded him saying, Lo sikachi shami b'nos Kenan, don't take a woman, a wife from the daughters of Canaan. Esav also saw the following. Vayishma Yaakov el aviv el imo. Esav saw that Yaakov listened to his father and to his mother. Vayelech Padan Aram. And he went to Padan Aram. Vayar Esav, and Esav saw Kiraos Benos Canaan, that the daughters of Canaan were evil. Beinei Yitzchak aviv, in the eyes of Yitzchak his father. Vayelech Esav el Yishmael. So Esav went to Yishmael. Vayikach es Machalas bas Yishmael ben Avraham, and he took Machalas, the daughter of Yishmael, the son of Avraham, Achos Nevayos, the sister of Nevayos, Alma Shav, in addition to his wives, he already had two wives, this is a third, Lo Liisha, to him for a wife. And that is the last pasuk in Parashas Toldos. Yitzchak sends Yaakov away. Esav sees. Now Esav's watching because Esav wants to kill Yaakov. So he's watching. He sees that Yitzchak blessed Yaakov, sent Yaakov to Padan Aram to take from him a wife from there. And when he blessed him, Esav saw that Yitzchak told Yaakov, "Do not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan."
How did he know all this?
What's that?
How Esav knew what exactly Esav said to Yaakov.
Apparently it wasn't a secret. Apparently he could hear it. It wasn't done in private. That's what it seems. You're right. You're asking that it was told to Yaakov, it wasn't told to Esav, but apparently he could hear. It wasn't something done privately or he couldn't hear. Yaakov then listened. Esav sees all this. Then Yaakov listens to his father and to his mother and goes to Padan Aram. Now, why does it tell us that Yaakov listened to his father and to his mother? We know he's listening to his father and to his mother, but Esav sees that Yaakov listened to his father and to his mother and went to Padan Aram. Now, we sitting around the table are aware that listening to his father and listening to his mother were two entirely different commandments. Listening to his father was about marriage. Listening to his mother was to protect himself from Esav. Here, in this discussion, the only thing mentioned here is marriage. It doesn't say anything about running away because of Esav. Esav then saw that the daughters of Canaan were evil in the eyes of Yitzchak, his father. So Esav goes, and he marries Mahalas. Esav seems to be aware of everything, as you pointed out. He seems to be aware that Yitzchak is sending Yaakov away to marry. He's aware that Yitzchak told Yaakov, do not marry from the daughters of Canaan. And he's aware that Yaakov is going for two reasons. He's going because of what his father said, but he's also going because of what his mother said. Esav seems to be aware of that as well. How is he aware of it? I don't know. I don't know if he heard what his mother told Yaakov, or somehow he saw the guarded nature that Yaakov now has towards him, and therefore he's aware that Yaakov has been tipped off. And somehow he knows that it's coming from his mother. Esav now knows that Yaakov has two reasons to go to Laban. One is because of his father's command to marry. One is because of his mother's command to protect himself from Esav. Esav's goal is now to usurp Yaakov. Esav here, at the whole Parashas Toldos has been one story of Esav attempting to get these blessings. He doesn't get them. Now he has been usurped by Yaakov. His goal now is to usurp Yaakov. Now, Yaakov is leaving. He's leaving both to protect himself and to marry. Now, Esav doesn't want that to happen. Esav wants to kill Yaakov. Where is Esav to get the merit through which he can defeat Yaakov? He knows that the way the blessing was given to him and to Yaakov is that Yaakov is in control. If Yaakov is righteous, Esav has no power over him. It's only if Yaakov fails and does wrong, then now Esav has power over him. Here, therefore, there is opportunity. You see, if Yaakov goes to Laban and Yaakov does not remain righteous, Esav then knows he has opportunity. He now can overthrow Yaakov. Because that's the way it's been set up. It's been set up as a seesaw that when Yaakov is up, Esav is down. When Yaakov is down, Esav is up. But it's all dependent on Yaakov. Well, if Yaakov is going to Laban, now there's opportunity. And in fact, we know that in Parshas Vayishlach, which will take us a little while to get to, but after the episode with Laban, when Yaakov is returning from Laban, and he knows that Esav is coming to meet him, to attack him, he sends a message to Esav, Im Laban Garti, I've lived with Laban, and we know the Medrash says, V'taryag mitzvah shamarti, I have guarded all 613 commandments. I have not failed. Your hopes for my failure while at Laban's house did not transpire. I'm still righteous. Don't think you have power over me. But there is opportunity over here. Esav wants to capitalize on that opportunity. Now, how is he going to capitalize on that opportunity? Esav sees what happens. He sees that that Yaakov is going for two reasons. And one of them is that his father, Yitzchak, has told him the daughters of Canaan are not for you. So Esav wants to therefore marry a woman who is not from Canaan. He wants to copy what Yaakov is about to do. Why does he want to copy what Yaakov was about to do? Why is that important to Esav? The brachos are already gone. What's the purpose here of trying to marry another woman? He already has two wives. He has children from those wives, as we'll see later. Why does he feel the need now to marry a third wife, who is not from the daughters of Canaan? Is this to mollify his father? He has no reason to mollify his father anymore. He has no reason to cultivate his father. He was trying to get the blessings, and that didn't work. So why does he feel the need now to go and marry another wife? Because Yitzchak doesn't like the two wives that he has.
To begin with, he has no competition now. His brother is gone, and he's trying to convince his father, and maybe to rescind.
Okay, maybe to change things.
Yes.
Okay, if that's possible.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, if Yitzchak falls and doesn't live up to his potential, then Esav gets it.
Good. Okay, very good. Is that a similar idea?
No, I was going to say that he's trying to look for some merit, some bechut.
Okay.
So he feels, well, the seesaw will go up, and maybe that will make Yaakov fail in his journey.
Okay.
Does it have to do with the lineage of who he's marrying?
Exactly.
Not just marrying
exactly.
A woman.
Exactly. Who does he marry? Machlas, the daughter of Yishmael, the son of Avraham. Now, I mean, we may have short memories, but we're not going to forget that Yishmael is the son of Avraham. Machlas, the daughter of Yishmael, the son of Avraham. As if we forgot. Of course we know he's the son of Avraham. But what you all realized is the Torah is pointing out to us, this is who he's marrying. He's marrying the granddaughter of Avraham. He's trying to buy into more merit and be able to deserve the blessings that he did not get. Because if Yaakov does fail, then his hope is things will move back to where to him. So if Yaakov fails and he can successfully kill Yaakov, then what will happen is he will assume his, what he believes is his rightful place in his position in the world. To do that, he then goes and ties himself in with Yishmael, the son of Avraham, by marrying Machlas. Yeah.
It appears that he keeps speaking that we know that he wants to kill Yaakov, but I think he wants to kill him spiritually, not just physically.
Well, they go hand in hand, because Esav has no control over Yaakov unless Yaakov is killed spiritually. So he needs both.
So suppose he kills him. Would he get the
In reality, he's not going to be able to kill him. And this is really the point that we brought up, I don't remember if it was last week or the week before, probably last time, that Rivka said to Yaakov, if he attacks you, you will kill him. And then his sons will kill you. But you can't, he can't kill you. He can try, but he won't be able to because you're currently righteous. So it would have to first start with a failure of Yaakov in order for Esav to somehow get his foot in the door. Our sages tell us a fascinating thing about this woman Machlas, this woman that Esav marries. Her name comes from two different roots, the name Machlas. And we learn two things from here, from her name. Machlas, can anybody think of one of the roots that comes from?
Malka, queen?
No, that would be with a lamed, with a kaf. This is Mem, Ches, Lamed.
How?
Lamed? Mem, Ches, Lamed. I'll tell you the less obvious one first.
Lechem?
No, that's close. I'll tell you the less obvious one first. The less obvious one is, it comes from the root machala. Machala means affliction. As the Gemara tells us, he added an affliction to his afflictions. He had two evil wives, and now he took a third evil wife. She was no righteous woman. That's one thing that the Gemara says based on her name. But there's another root in her name as Machlas. Mem Ches Lamed. How about Michael? Michael, to forgive. To forgive. And it is from here that the Gemara derives that when one gets married, then they Michael lo akol avonosav. All of his sins get forgiven. When a person marries, the Gemara says three things. When a person marries, when a person is oyla ligdula, when he rises to greatness, or gershen iskayer, a convert that converts, those three people, all their sins get forgiven at that moment. That's why when a person marries, under the chuppah, it's considered to be like a Yom Kippur for the bride and groom. That's part of the reason, not the full reason, part of the reason why they fast the day of their wedding, because it's a mini Yom Kippur for them. Because the Gemara tells us that when one marries, all of their sins are forgiven. Which is difficult to understand because it's derived from here, where he's marrying an evil wife, and the other thing that's learned from here is that he added an affliction to his afflictions. So is this good or bad? Is it forgiveness, or is it that he's now digging a deeper hole for himself? Which one is it? And what's that?
Digging a deeper hole, it seems.
It seems, right? So then how do we have both from the same root over here? So it seems as follows. Why is it that a convert and someone who assumes a position of greatness and one who marries, why do they get all their sins forgiven? And the answer is because when a person begins a brand new stage of life, a stage in life that they had never been before, where they are now totally transformed, a brand new place. You see, it doesn't only apply to these three cases. These three cases are examples of how this can happen. The process of a Baal Tshuva would be a very similar process. But when a person begins a brand new place in their life, it's totally different from what they had before. Someone was single, they married. Someone was did not have any position, then they all of a sudden were elevated to a position of greatness. A convert, I mean, there's no greater change than that. And a person has totally changed, then their sins are forgiven. What do you mean their sins are forgiven? It's just like that? Sins are forgiven? Why should that be?
Rabbi, that bothers me.
Which one bothers you?
About sins forgiven.
Yeah, good.
God forbid that a murderer,
right?
All of a sudden converts to Judaism or whatever, or gets a wife,
and boom,
his sins are forgiven.
Forgiven. How can that be?
That can't be.
It can't be, right? It can't be. You're right, it can't be. So what the Talmud is telling us is the potential in turning oneself into a new person is so dramatic during those three times, and there are other times as well, where the person can really make themselves into a new person. A person who wants to change, a person who's looking to repent, a person who's looking to become a new man, these are prime times in a person's life when they can do it. And there are other similar times as well. Even someone who is a murderer, he can still repent, he can have remorse, he can if he truly, truly regrets what he did and he tries to make up for it. A person can achieve forgiveness if they try hard enough. Now, remember, we, meaning the courts down here, not the upstairs courts,
yeah,
but down here, we don't take those things into account. When a Jewish court tries someone for murder, the person can beg and cry and say, I regret everything I did. Doesn't matter. The law is, you killed,
right,
you get killed.
Right.
But if a person is not able to be tried by a court down here, either because there were no witnesses or because we don't have courts like today, we don't have Jewish courts that can try for the laws of the Torah. So then if a person gets away with it down here, then it's between him and the courts upstairs. And then a person could beg for forgiveness, and you never know what can happen. So the potential for true repentance and true forgiveness in those significant moments of life is incredibly great. And marriage is one of those times. However, if a person does not seize those opportunities, then the person is much worse than they were before. Because here they had the chance to completely reform themselves. And instead, they're not only refusing to reform themselves, but they are continuing in their evil ways. Then it's the worst thing possible. Hosif machla al machalosav. He adds an affliction to his afflictions. He's just digging a deeper hole for himself. Here, Esav could have sought out a true righteous woman, seeing that Yitzchak rejects his wives, seeing that Yaakov is going to marry a righteous woman. Esav could have said, you know what? I need to look differently. I need to follow the example of my brother. I need to take my father's words seriously, and I'm ready to change. I'm ready to start anew. I'll marry. I'll become a new person, and I will reject my old life, and I will embrace a new life, and through in so doing, I will earn my place as Yaakov's associate. I will never be Yaakov's superior, but I can be his associate. I can be the one who facilitates what Yaakov is doing. Esav could have done that, and he had that potential right here. And instead, he turned around and grabbed hold of yet another evil woman, yet another affliction, adding to his afflictions. That's why they're both derived from the same place here.
For him to show that he truly was going to change himself as a person and find a righteous life, he would have had to divorce himself from the other two wives, no?
Well, I would imagine that's true, but it's so much conjecture. We don't know what he would have had to do. He didn't do it.
Right.
If he would have begun down that path, then we could have talked about what it would have taken.
Well, he shows he just continued the same path that he was on.
Right. That's right.
Well, where is he going to find this righteous woman?
Yeah, right. So I'll tell you.
Like the only one is Laban's daughter.
So I'll tell you the answer to that question. Right, Laban's daughter.
Oh, yes, and Leah.
That's the answer to that question.
Leah wants to thank him.
So he has to go to where Yaakov is.
That's right.
And marry the other daughter.
That's right. As we know, Rachel. It was destined for Yaakov, and Leah cried and cried and cried. Why? Because she was destined for Esav. And that's where Esav could have been. And we're going to talk about this at length when we get up to Rachel and Leah. What could have been, and what actually is. And what could have been with Rachel and Leah and Yaakov and Esav, and how things could have worked. What would have happened, and what actually did happen. We're going to talk about that extensively. That's really what the story of Lavan, of the whole business of Yaakov and Lavan is all about. It's all about how to understand what should have happened and what actually happened. And we're going to discuss this at length. So Esav has this opportunity. He has an epiphany. Even Esav has an epiphany. But he does not seize the opportunity. Instead, he turns around and does the same thing, only more. And he's lost. That's how Esav reacts. It's very informative for us that when we have these significant moments in our lives, we have to understand that it's not just, it just so happens that we've had significant moments. But significant moments, we really have had a chance to turn ourselves around. Every time these things happen, they don't happen that often in life. But when a person has a watershed moment in their life, it really is significant. The common, I don't want to say common because it's never that common, but the story of the quintessential Baal Tshuva, where they saw how they wanted it to change their lives, and they over a period of time did change their lives. But that's what's going on over here. That's what they experienced in their journey. Everybody has their own story in their journey from where they were to where they are, or where they're going. Everybody has a story like that. That's what's being described over here, except that these moments are blink of an eye type moments, where it's sudden. But the same thing happens in the process of changing one's life. And we all go through life hoping to change, and we're all hoping to improve ourselves. That's what life is all about. This is where Esav failed again. We pointed out last time at the end of Parshas Chaye Sara, that it is from this verse here, and a similar verse at the end of Chaye Sara, where we derive that Yaakov went and studied for 14 years before going to Laban's house. You recall that class, that's what we put up on the board, that whole complicated lineage. It's not there anymore. It's not there. Okay, there you go. All right, it's all there. Just read it. Okay. So we talked about it then, and we talked about how the fact that that's derived from Yishmael's death speaks well of Yishmael. Because Yishmael did do teshuva at the end of his life. Esav, here, instead of following Yishmael's example, he marries his daughter, but does not follow that example. Instead, he continues off in his way. So, again, we have Yaakov going off to Lavan for two reasons. To protect himself from Esav and to marry. And we have Esav knowing all of this, seeing the potential, and not seizing the opportunity. Before Yaakov goes, he studies for 14 years, uninterrupted learning. This learning is an intense learning that Yaakov had not known previously and does not know again. It is a learning where he is, it says he was tamun beveis Aver. He was literally, that means buried, in the house of Aver. Aver was the name of the person who ran the yeshiva where he was. He was buried in that yeshiva for 14 years. Yaakov is 63 years old when he leaves, and he is 77 years old when he actually gets to Laban's house, because he's hidden in this yeshiva for 14 years. During that time, Yaakov does nothing but intensive study. We will see later, the next time we meet, in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, that during that time, Yaakov does not sleep normally. It says he did not sleep, he didn't lie down at night. Doesn't mean that he stayed up for 14 years, which is the way that children like to be told the story, and that's why the story is often told. That's not accurate. But it means that he didn't sleep normally. He didn't go lie down in bed. He did nothing but study. It was intensive study. That's not possible for a family man. That's for someone, a man who is single, who is not yet married. He can actually apply himself in that way, and that's what Yaakov does. He has no obligations to a wife or children yet. He's about to have many obligations, but he doesn't have them yet. And he's a man with a price on his head. He has to avoid Esav. So, he's going to get married. He knows that once he's married, he will not be able to study with this intensity. He knows the dangers and the pitfalls of where he's going. It's Lavan's house. Bethuel's house. And he knows that he's got a brother who's out to kill him. Those factors come together to create an intensity of learning. He knows he has to learn, but he knows he has to be hidden. The only way to do that is to bury himself in the yeshiva, to be where no one will find him, to be in a place where he is completely and totally immersed in his learning. He doesn't set foot out of the walls of the yeshiva. That's where he is. His meals are taken there, he catnaps there, and he does nothing but study. No diversions, nothing else. The reason why he's able to apply himself in that way is the combination of all these factors that we have here. His mother tells him, your brother wants to kill you, you can't be visible. His father tells him, you need to marry. Well, to marry, he needs to study first to perfect himself in order to marry well. And they both tell him, go to Lavan. Lavan, that deceitful person. Those factors come together to make Yaakov aware of the fact that he needs to sit and study first for 14 years. And that's what he does. The model that Yaakov establishes is the model of the yeshivas today. Obviously not for 14 years. But the model that the yeshivas today try to mimic and try to provide for their students is a place where a young man can go to study the Torah uninterrupted and without any diversions, where the study can be done intensely before marriage, before being tied down with a wife and children, before the obligations and the need to put bread on the table. And this is the model that's being provided over here. That's the idea of the intensity of learning. Obviously, we're not Yaakov. we can't study for 14 years in that manner, but to have an experience of very intense learning of the Torah for a nice chunk of time, that's what we're trying to mimic in the yeshiva experience, is trying to mimic what Yaakov does.
Rabbi, what did he do for 63 years with the realization that, you know, that where he was going and what he was going to be, and
you're right,
all of a sudden,
you're right,
at start at the age of 63.
So we had already learned that Yaakov was a learned man.
Yes.
He sat in the tents of Shem and Aver and yes, studied. But that studying couldn't be with the same intensity as this studying, because his life wasn't on the line. See, when you have a price on your head, you can't go for a coffee break.
Is that what you tell your children?
He also had obligations to serve his parents, which he didn't have now, because his parents sent them away. So he's there. Now, I will tell you, having gone through some experience with the yeshiva world in that model, obviously not to the intensity of Yaakov, but having gone through it to some extent, and having tried to, in some small way, to live up to what Yaakov did, and that's really what every yeshiva bachur is trying to do, trying to be in some way like Yaakov for a short time. A lot of them are walking by right now. So to try to do that, and it is an experience that cannot be replicated in any other forum. It can't be done. It is something which is a very special experience, and something to be encouraged for those who can do it.
Do the yeshivas give a deadline?
It depends on the yeshiva. It depends on the yeshiva. I mean, there are natural deadlines. It costs money to go. There's tuitions. But besides that, a person wants to marry. Person wants to have children, person wants to, you know, there's natural deadlines that ought to present themselves. But the notion, and you try crazy things when you're in yeshiva. I had a friend who, it was reputed at one time, spent 3 days in the Beis Medrash, in the study hall, and didn't leave. He didn't go back to his dorm room to sleep, he just stayed there for 3 days. Now, did it actually happen or not? I'm not 100% sure. It was reputed that he tried that. Is it possible that someone in the yeshiva atmosphere may try a stunt like that? Yeah, it's possible. you know how it is anyway. I mean, college-aged boys, they'll try anything, right? So that's what's happening. But it's all the stunts and all the craziness that goes on in universities throughout the country for that age. But here, it's being applied towards trying to mimic what Yaakov is doing here, and that's what goes on. And so it's an interesting type of atmosphere. And it provides a certain intensity which can't be found anywhere else. And it's something which really stays with a person for the rest of their lives. And that's the Yaakov does over here. And he does it on a grand scale of 14 years. Let me reiterate. We will not meet next week. Next week is the Kollel dinner. We will not meet next week. So we will meet again, please God, on March 9th.
I'm going to visit Bob G.